There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Hello, everybody. You join us here on a bright day today. The sun is beaming in through the window. Lovely, lovely. But it's easy to think that everything's all right with the world when we are just about to hit more restrictions, re the COVID. And it's a mad old time, isn't it? You don't feel like you make any plans because things change on such a daily basis. And I get it. We're trying to keep each other alive, and we got to be careful out there. But at the same time, you know, it's not good for the old noggin, is it? You know, Saturday? The area's going into high alert restrictions this weekend, and they are London, Essex, Elmbridge in Surrey. Why only Elmbridge in Surrey? Why not all of Surrey? Just one specific place. So Elmbridge, I don't know what you're doing in Elmbridge, but you're in high alert now, people. Barrow-in-Furness in Cumbria. Oh, that's, oh, blimey. It's just odd places, isn't it? York, North East Derbyshire. Not all of Derbyshire, it's just the northeast of it. Chesterfield and Earwash. Oh, it's got Earwash as well in Derbyshire. So shout out to anybody in those areas. I'm feeling you. I'm really sorry that this is happening. I don't know what we're going to do. We've got to stop licking each other, touching each other, wear those masks. I know we get a load of people saying they don't do nothing, but at least they're doing something, aren't they? If nothing but to show respect to our fellow man. I don't know, it's a funny one. There's a lot to take on board, isn't it, all this? And a shout out as well to Rachel Wells, Wellsy. I saw your videos the other day of your roof coming in, and it stressed me out, mate. I'm not gonna lie, I saw that happening, and it was the water running towards the fuse box through the ceiling. That was quite a worry, but you seem to have got your head around that, and you've sorted that out. So well done. That was quite the old internet content going on. So big shout out to you, mate. Hope you're all right. I'm waffling. Let's get on with the show. This week's guest is a comedian and rapper, Joe Jacobs. And Joe, I've known for a few years. We've worked together a few times. A lovely guy. I've wanted to get on for a while. And we just thought, fuck it, let's do it. So he came on the show. We had a lovely chat. We covered a lot of ground. He's a lovely guy, very intelligent, very open. It was really cool, as all the guests always are. They're always great when they come on. And Joe was no exception. Absolutely brilliant to have him on. So let's get on with it. Coming up in a little while, Joe Jacobs.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Joe.
Hello.
Hello, mate. I'm glad I did this just before. What I do, I always like to look up the guests and see if there's anything I can find out about them. So I Googled you, and you probably had this before, but stop me if not. It came up, right? Joe Jacobs, and it went, you've been in Holby City, you've been in the Bill, and all this stuff came up. Your picture's at the top, and I'm looking down at you, and his father is Clark Peters, who was in The Wire.
And I'm
dad. And I'm like, what's this? And then and I showed Jay. She's like, no, that can't be right.
A lot of people don't know that. My dad's Clark Peters. Big up my dad. He's I think he helped me a lot in this industry, obviously, with his work that he did. And people know him for The Wire, but he's a really respected actor in his own right and all sorts of other projects.
And it helped you up the ladder, mate, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, he got me on Holby, which was a nice little... It was a good... No, I'm fucking around. but you know what's funny about that, right? I met Clark Peters, who I love.
Yeah, of course. He's a dude.
Love him. I met him at Edinburgh Fringe 1 year, and I had a picture with him, and that was my profile picture, like, years ago. And the other Joe Jacobs got in touch with me on Facebook and said, that's my dad. I'm a Joseph Jacobs too. See you later. Men's,
that's madness. Madness. And so when it popped up,
it really winds him up.
But Jade said, that can't be true. And I'm like, well, that's Joe's picture there at the top. And that just goes to show I should not be allowed anywhere near the internet, Joe.
Well, it just goes to show I'm sort of at a level in my career where these sort of admin errors are allowed to take place and no one really cares or notices.
No one says anything. Oh, yeah, that must be, yeah, fine, just leave it. It doesn't matter. How you been anyway, Joe? You well? I haven't spoken to you for a while.
I'm good, man. I had a really good week. I got signed. That's nice.
I saw that. We've got the same agent.
Yeah. Well, they like any good?
They are actually, mate. Yeah.
Probably have this conversation off air.
Yeah, let's not do it on air. Yeah, they are.
Nah,
they're
I'm
very
playing, I'm playing. I know
they're good people. Good
I know
people.
They're good. That was a really nice day because I tell you what, I've had some ups and downs during this game the last decade.
Yeah, of course.
That was a day when everything went well.
Nice. I mean,
there's a pandemic and everything, but that was a good day. I turned my phone off. I just walked about for a bit. Good vibes. Yeah.
That's the thing with this industry and this company. We've talked about this a lot on here. It's the same with all the, any sort of like the acting and things like that. You do get a lot of knockbacks and there's a lot of having to kind of pick yourself up and dust yourself off constantly because, you know, you really want to do it. Yeah. You really want to do this, but, yeah, you know, it's the knockbacks that will do you. So when something nice like that happens, it's a fucking, what a day, isn't it? What a day.
Oh, man, beautiful. And the knockbacks, they're absolutely savage and heartrending, but really, in the big scheme of things, very irrelevant. Like when I talk to friends about it, when I'm really down, they kind of put me back in perspective because it's like always silly things really. But in the moment, they're very, very, very powerful.
Oh, for sure. Oh, absolutely. I've done jobs. I've not been in this industry. I've been in it for like sort of 15 years or so. So before that, I had other jobs and those jobs, it makes you realize that doing this is kind of it's a privilege, isn't it? You know, and, you know, it's
absolutely,
it's, you know, it's brutal. Yes, it's emotionally, you get a bit of a kick in, but it's still a privilege to be able to do it. And that's what sort of keeps me going. I'm not driving. And no disrespect to people that drive vans and things like that. It's just, I've done that and I know how hard it is. And so I know that I'm not doing that anymore. So,
and if comedy was easy, everyone would do it. So you've got to expect it to be horrific.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And
I also think that many other jobs are as brutal as comedy anyway. I used to be in retail and hospitality. Like I was a waiter once upon a time. I was the worst waiter you've ever seen in your life. And I couldn't do that job. I couldn't stick to that job. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I had flat feet, man. I was in agony. I was miserable.
Just hated it. Where were you a waiter? Was it a fancy restaurant?
No, not even. I was a waiter when I lived in Leeds for a year. I was a waiter in a hotel restaurant like near my house. It was absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
I was so bad as well. I don't know why he gave me the job, but it was one of them times when I really needed the work. I really needed the money. I didn't really have much going on. I wasn't doing comedy. I was trying to be a rapper in Leeds, of all places.
Because it's known for its rapping and its hip hop and.
Well, to be fair, there's a good Leeds scene. To be fair,
is there?
Leeds? Yeah.
Oh, I love Leeds. I've no disrespect to Leeds whatsoever.
No.
I love
there's a
Leeds,
good rap scene in Leeds. Good artists up in Leeds. Big star. A lot of talent in the north. Full stop.
Yes.
But yeah, I wasn't one of the talented people back then. So I was working in a restaurant, and I was bad. Robert,
I mean, I only know you through comedy, and if anyone ever said to me, Joe used to be a waiter, I'd be like, are you fucking kidding?
Man, I've done all kinds of jobs, I delivered pizza for Domino's up in Leeds as well. That was actually all right. I quite like that. Until...
But it teaches you how to, teach you about life, doesn't it? Doing a proper job, doing that, I think it makes you realize, like I say, it goes back to makes us realize how lucky we are doing what we do now.
Definitely. And I think it gives you a lot of, what's the word, emotional intelligence.
I think so. Yeah.
If you haven't worked a kind of tough, low-paying job, I don't really respect you. And I think it's true though. And I think it shows, like, you know, people who are disrespectful to like staff at a restaurant or something, you know that they're probably not worth your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I remember being in Dubai and one of the people I was with was giving shit to the staff there. And you're like, one, they speak, at least as far as I can work out, they speak one more language than you do. So these people are far more intelligent than you are. So they're doing this job because they have to do it, I imagine. They don't want to do it, really. And you're giving them shit because they haven't got you any ketchup, you bell end.
It's disgraceful.
Absolutely.
Disgraceful. And the people, you know, the people in restaurants that really love doing what they do, like, I admire them so much.
Mm.
You know, someone who gets on their knees to tell you about these specials.
Yeah.
One of them guys. Like, yeah, I could never give a shit about what you're eating that much. I wanted you to leave. I hated it. I had to do the breakfast buffet at the hotel restaurant. It was awful.
Oh, you know? God, just keep restocking it.
Oh, God, burning my hands. No one cares. Just running around. Crazy. Crazy.
And what about the Domino's? How long did you last doing Domino's?
I didn't last long doing Domino's. It was only a few months. But I tell you what, it was all right, man, because I used to just drive around, I was smoking weed and listening to Ludacris, and like, it was all right. I had a great time. And then one day I had to deliver a pizza to my oldest friend's brother's student house.
Mm.
And then my world came crushing down. You know, I had the hat on and everything. It was very, very depressing.
Did they give you some stick? They give you some stick.
Mate, they didn't even give me a tip. So they didn't give me stick. They was just shocked. It was like, didn't I see you like a couple months ago in London? You were the photographer at my 21st birthday. Times are tough. I was going to pretend to be Polish, sort of throw them off, but
it's too late by then. But like you say, it teaches you things if you start off in that respect doing, because I used to, my first job was cleaning cement mixers with an angle grinder.
Yeah,
when I was 15 years old, I used to work for a place called Hire Easy. So, you know, £10 a day I used to get. That's how far away that was. I was 15, £10 a day.
That loved
it. That taught you a thing or two, mate.
Mm.
Yeah,
I did some painting, decorating. I done all kinds of stuff. I love it. Gives you nothing wrong with a bit of graft, man.
No,
these days, everything I do is all digital. My hands are very soft and supple. I need to go out in a mine or something.
Dirty them up a bit.
Perspective.
You need to get out there and get your hands dirty.
Yeah, I wouldn't survive in a mine.
I always, when this happened, when the shit went down with this lockdown and everything, and I was like, well, I'll just get a job doing something else. I just couldn't, one, I couldn't find one because everybody was getting new jobs, but I'm like, I don't know if I could do that anymore. I don't know if I could dig holes in the floor, and I just don't think I'm cut out for it. I think I've had too much of a cushy life.
Oh, me too. I thought, I don't know about you, I just thought comedy really was over, and it was nice while it lasted, and now it's kind of time to get on the armor and fight for shopping. It's like the apocalypse. That's what I thought.
I had a moment like that when I was coming in with shopping, and I think I'd watched something like Mad Max or some shit like that. So I was like, we better shut the blinds while we put your shopping away in case anyone can see what we've got.
Yeah. I mean, in the beginning of the lockdown, when you were in the supermarket, those vibes were terrifying, you know. Yeah. Like they had all the speakers on, you know, saying, one item per customer, please. Yeah, it was really apocalyptic vibes. Everyone in masks, shouting at each other to keep away.
Oh, man, the music as well. I remember saying this at the beginning on one of these episodes about the music was still playing. So I'm walking around this empty supermarket with broken people trying to find whatever they can find amongst what was left, but still like this joyous like pop music playing,
man.
And you're like, oh my god, it was really something else. And you just go, shit, you don't realize how quickly society could crumble.
I know, but unfortunately for us, we're in England, and we got, I mean, I hate to say it, but we've got a dangerously thick population that don't really appreciate each other as much as they should.
Absolutely.
That doesn't help. No. I was in Spain for a week during all this stuff, and everyone was shouting at me when I was on the pavement with my mask not on properly.
Right.
And then I come back to London. I'm on the train, which is an actual Petri dish. People aren't wearing masks. And anyway.
You're right, man.
Yeah. I think it's because we just had too much and took it for granted. And now when there's a little opportunity to have some collective spirit or whatever, most people, they don't really want to do it.
No. Well, this is why I love doing this podcast, because we're building up quite a community, and I get messages from people all the time, and we have chats here and there, and it's really nice to know that there's other people out there that kind of, that actually do give a shit, because you can get caught up in all the bollocks, you know, and start thinking everybody's being selfish and everybody's being a twat. But the people that listen to this, you know, and big shout out to all of you for listening to this. They are wonderful people.
And I really bet they are.
Makes my heart sing, Joe. Makes my heart sing, mate.
Nah, for real. I know some good people. I got some good people during all this that helped me out. Like even comics, you know. I was checking in with comics, and there's a certain comic, I won't name him, but we were having a chat, catching up, and he was like offering me money if I needed it, which I didn't. But he just threw it out there, and I'm like, wow.
What a classy guy. Do you know what? That's the majority of our industry. There's a lot of people, a lot of comedians that are out there for each other. They will look out for you. I'll name his name, Math Brown. Math Brown, we just, at the beginning of the thing, I've been friends with Math since I was an open spot. We just hit it off, and he's been really good to me over the years. He just went, we were just chatting, and he went, how are you? I went, yeah, I'm good. And he put 100 quid in my bank. He just went, there's 100 quid in your bank. Yeah. Just like that. He went, I don't want it back. I just want to make sure you're all right for a bit. And that I will never forget. So, Math, if you're listening, nice one, brother. And it's
all right, well, I'm going to name this guy then.
Go on.
Fuck it. It was Kane Brown, the G.
Ah, mate, I love Kane Brown. Kane Brown.
That's my guy. He's the classiest dude ever. Love him.
Yeah, I love Kane Brown. He's a guy. When I first started in comedy, I used to run a night. And I wasn't very good at it. I was a terrible promoter. And I was never very good at booking. So it was always last minute, and I always ring. I said, get hold of Kane Brown, Marlon, Prince Abdi, and all them. Go, look, can you come down and do my gig? And they'd come down every other week or every week. They went, yeah, we'll come down. Because it was fucking great. Lovely bunch of lads.
Kane's the man. Kane's the best.
Yeah, he's a lovely man.
He's classy, man. I've seen him do so much kindness at shows. I've seen him like pay for people's cabs home and all sorts. He's just a class act.
Yeah,
Not enough of them.
No, exactly. He's a really lovely bloke. He's a really lovely bloke. So we were talking about, you were talking about the rapping. Have you always been a fan of hip hop? When did this start, Joe?
When did it start? I was trying to be a garage MC when I was a kid.
Yeah.
There was a weird time to be a garage MC because I'm not from any kind of rough streets or anything. And we were actually getting mugged a lot of the time. So it was like the antithesis of me and, you know, an MC with a lot to brag about. But I still loved the music and I wanted to be involved, but garage was kind of in full swing. So I didn't really have a place in it. I gave it a try with mixed results. And then, I just started writing hip hop around when was it? 2006, really. 2007, I was trying to make rap. And like I said, I moved to Leeds and tried to continue it with a producer up there.
Mm.
I'm still working with. We still make tunes together.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. So where did you grow up then, Joe?
I grew up in a place called Boreham Wood.
I know, yeah.
And I grew up around there with my mum. And then I lived with my dad. Parents are separated. I lived with my dad for about 3 years. He lived sort of in the countryside-ish area.
Mm.
Chesham.
I know, yeah.
I stayed there for 3 years. That wasn't very nice. I love my dad, but he married a fucking idiot.
Oh, shit. Oh,
he's in the middle of a horrific divorce.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's bad. It's real bad around these parts, man.
it's crazy. Tricky, isn't it, when a parent, I mean, I haven't experienced this, but I know other people that have, when your parents marry someone that you just don't get on with, you know, and you know, like you say, you love your dad, but this other person now, and their loyalty split as well, I guess, because they love her and it's your, you know, you're their son.
Man, I don't know how else to say it. The woman's a cunt. I'm sorry. Oh, really, I was trying to be a bit. She's put us through a lot. She put us through hell. And when they were together, it was kind of weird because my dad, and he basically said to me, look, you're out the house. You're doing what you do. This is my life. I've got two daughters with this woman. I'm married to her. I've got to make this work. I've got to put this relationship ahead of everything, even you, which he shouldn't have done. I've since realized he should have just been straight with her and said, look, my son is my son. He's got to be a part of my life and all that. But yeah, the signs were there and chickens come home to roost. And now, unfortunately, we're all sort of paying the price.
Oh, shit, mate. I'm sorry to hear that.
That's all right.
It's a tricky one. Because like with my sons and ex-partners of mine, and there's been, you know, they haven't really seen eye to eye. And but you have to say, look, it's my sons. These are my boys. And they will come first. And that's how it is. You know,
it's pretty basic stuff, but like it should have been a warning sign to him when she's having issues with me, her husband's or partner's son. And I got a sister as well. And she had issues with both of us and we were banned from the house. We didn't see him very often. It's all very controlled. She's just like a narcissistic personality.
Mm. Oh my God. How did you find that? How did you handle that?
It's fucking horrible.
Yeah.
I'm still dealing with it to this day. Like I got into a couple of years ago, say about, when was it? Like maybe 3-4 years ago, I saw a therapist off the back of, I think I was like just drinking, doing drugs, just partying too much. And it was all reaching ahead. And I saw a therapist who kind of set me straight, got me medicated correctly. And then I started unpacking all this shit, and it still definitely has affects how I am with relationships, professionally, everything. And how, you know, it would do.
Oh, well, really absolutely. Like trust issues, and like, especially when it's someone that, you know, you trust that, but it's your parents, so you trust them.
Yeah, yeah. And I've got a family of fucking lunatics. I mean, I'm not going to put it all on my stepmother.
No.
I've got big drug addicts in my family. My uncle's like fucking off his nut. Fuck knows where he is. My uncle's suing my dad at the moment.
Oh, my God. Fucking hell, man.
It's all kicking off, bro. It's all kicking off. And my poor old man, he should be retiring, and he's really having the biggest fight of his life. And I wish I could... I wish I could do more for him. I wish I was loaded. I could get him out of all this.
But
I have to kind of just support him how I can.
Oh, shit, man. But what do you do for respite? Do you have an outlet for it? Are you still having counselling?
No, I can't afford it. But
no,
I would like to get back into it. It came at a really pivotal time. It's like in true Jewish style. I really waited until I could sort of maximize the efficiency of the sessions by being at a complete emotional loss. So I was like really getting my money's worth, fucking giving a lot to work with.
All the stereotypes.
But I would like to go back, but I don't think I can at the moment. But it was so invaluable. Little things she was telling me about myself that I never really stopped to consider. You know, like things like, like I would do a gig and I'd come back at 3 a.m. and I'd feel bad for sleeping in, feel like a bum. Right. And she's like, "You're okay. It's okay to just stay in. You know, you have worked. You've done a long drive. You've come back at 3, 4 a.m. Why don't you can sleep in? It's about looking after yourself. Simple things like that no one had really ever said.
It's funny.
In my mind, I just get up. Oh, I should be doing something. Anything.
Yeah.
And just burn yourself out.
Well, I think there's a lot of that happens in this industry. I know I've felt that as well. And I'd feel terrible all day going, I need to be doing something. I need to be doing admin, or I need to be talking to someone, or I should be working or doing something. I just felt guilty between the hours of 9 and 5.
Yeah.
And then in the evening, I'd be like, okay, I don't have to worry about it now. It's the evening and it's the weekend. But then I'd be really productive. So, you know, I stop beating myself up and go, no, I don't work those hours. This is when I work.
Yeah. And if you didn't want to work, you don't have to work. If you if you do what you need to do and you do what you you pay what you got to pay, you got a roof over your head, keeping your people in your life happy, fuck it.
Exactly. And I think that's the same for everyone everywhere, regardless of the industry they're in. I think we do have to give ourselves a break sometimes. There's too much pressure put on everybody to be a certain way and to achieve certain things, and your life should be this, and if it's not that, then you're not a decent citizen. And we just need to just fucking chill out, man. As long as everyone's happy and you're happy.
Yeah. I'll speak to friends of mine who are very secure. They got a good job, nice families, own their own home, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh man, I want that for me. I really want that for me. But the reality is that isn't for me. I'd fucking be miserable if I had that, really.
Yeah.
I don't have it too bad. Yeah.
No, I'm the same. I had that. I had that kind of, and no disrespect to anyone that I've ever been in a relationship with, but I had that kind of normal life and I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle it. It's like, you know, should we go to the garden center? I'm like, I can't face it. I literally can't. And I've said that before on here. I know I have. And I'm not, again, no disrespect to anyone who's listening, likes garden centers. I think it's what it represents to me.
A garden center's all right.
I can't handle it, man. I can't. Why gone?
They have aquariums and stuff. They're all right.
I think I'm petrified of being. I don't know what I'm petrified of. I don't know.
Petrified of plants.
Yeah. I think I saw the triffids too early, and now it's
the commitment thing, isn't it? It's the commitment.
Probably.
If you're in a garden center, you commit into a tree which could live for 100 years. You know, I had the same thing. Another thing the therapist told me is like, I always live very, very minimal.
Okay.
Wherever I live, I never really felt like anywhere was truly home, and I never really had too much stuff where I lived. And I've lived in these sort of property guardian places where, you know, you'd live in an old office block or, you know, a shack or somewhere. And I was in Soho for a time and this place was sparse as fuck. And I was asking her, I was like, why do I do that? Everywhere I go, I never really have too much. And she said, it's because you're worried you're going to go. Like, you don't want to put your roots down somewhere. And that was pretty profound to hear as well. And
you're
she's
like,
right.
You're like Robert De Niro's character, Neil in Heat, when he said, you know, never have anything in your life that you can't walk away from in 30 seconds flat.
Exactly. You know what's funny? I actually watched Heat for the first time a month ago. Was that Jade?
Great. Yeah, Jade. It's a film. It's in a film, Jade.
Yeah, but you said that with such vitriol, like you think...
You can't hear the conversation. You're heckling half a conversation. I'm talking to my friend. She says, hey, Joe.
Hey, Jade, what's up?
He says, hey, what's up?
Yeah, I just watched Heat for the first time.
I love it. It's one of my favourite films.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
She got a great ass. Other than that, yeah. The music
Other than that bit, yeah.
That was my favourite bit. The music's great. I love how it looks really fresh and yet it's so long ago.
What I love is the scene when they're walking down the street and they're just firing at the police with these fucking huge weapons. Mm. But there's no dramatic music over the top.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's just the drama of the scene is what they're relying on, and I love that.
Yeah, I read about what was involved in that. Apparently the director kind of went for a different approach and he had lots of microphones around the set to make it sort of like modern warfare rather than like After Effects on the guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really, really good film.
I love that. It's based, that bit is actually based on a true life thing, that shootout. Actually, there was some guys in real life did that. So,
really?
Yeah. Anyway, we're going off topic a little bit.
This isn't quite good vibes for the old podcast saying just grab a gun.
Grab a gun and don't shoot them.
Don't do that, listeners.
Absolutely don't do that.
I wouldn't do that. I'm non-violent. I'm not robbing any banks. I like the film.
I've always wondered. Oh, you couldn't do it now. The technology is, you know, you're not.
I have considered crime. I would like to do one big crime, but you can't do a big crime these days. You just
do like a heist.
Yeah, if I could do a heist, I'd do it. I couldn't sell drugs. I couldn't really do fraud properly. I'd be a terrible criminal because I'm not good at admin. And morally, I would fold. I'm obsessed with true crime. I watch the interviews, though. I don't watch programs. I like watching police interrogations.
Oh, yeah.
I would fold in a minute.
Oh, man. I'd give it all up in an instant. I'd be terrible.
I can't lie.
I just wouldn't. Even if I tried, I'd give it away. Like Jade says, I've got to tell. She knows when I'm lying. And she won't tell me what it is, but
I have one too. I got a girlfriend. She told me what it is. It's I yawn.
Ah.
And now I'm aware of it. If she talks about something I don't want to talk about, I'll start the sentence. I'll go, all right. And that's how she knows now. That's how she knows.
Yes.
It's a tick. Giving me away.
Actually, Jay did tell me what one of mine was. And she said, if my voice goes up, the pitch changes when I'm lying. If she asks me something, I go, no, of course not. No, it's not true.
You liar.
Lying sack of shit. And it's not normally, it's not because I'm trying to, it's rather I'm trying to avoid an argument. Yeah. So rather than just be honest, I'll go, no, it's fine. I realise just be honest, man. So you got a partner?
Yeah, I got a new partner. Oh, came out of a relationship of 5 years.
Yeah.
Everything's good. I mean, I can't talk about old stuff, but I was, my new girlfriend, she's in recovery.
Okay.
And I've been out with people in the past who had issues with addiction, drink, drugs maybe.
Yeah.
So now it's actually cool to go with someone the complete opposite. Who's got that shit together?
Coming out the other side.
It's quite refreshing.
I got a mate. We were our neighbour actually, Bobby. He's in recovery, and I didn't realise when we first moved in. We met him, and he's from the East End. He's like, all right, Richie, you're up, mate. He's an old school East End geezer, and I was talking about drinking and drugs and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, maybe we'll go out. We're going to have a pint. And he went a bit weird. He's like, yeah, maybe. And it worked. So we got to know him. He's like, yeah, he goes, he hadn't long been in recovery. So it was still weird for him. But it's so impressive. When he tells you the stories about what he used to be like and what he's like now, that strength that he found is incredible.
Yeah, man. You know? I know a lot of people in my family who should be in recovery. I went to meetings for recovery, not for myself. Like I had my stepmother's sister was an addict, and she took me to a meeting once, and I didn't even know why. And it was very bizarre. I think I must have been about, I don't know how old it was, like maybe 9, 10, maybe 11. And she, I was staying with her. She was supposed to take me somewhere. It didn't happen. And then the next day she goes, I've got to take you to my meeting. I'm like, cool. And I'm in a NA meeting, and then they're all going around doing all the, I don't know why I'm in it. They're all doing the, I'm an addict thing. And then she says to me during her share, she goes, I should have taken you to such and such yesterday, but I didn't. I was high on drugs.
Oh my God.
I was like, that's cool. I don't mind. It's cool. That's all right. It was very bizarre.
How did you cope with that? I mean, you're only 11.
I think I was 11. Yeah. How did I cope with it? At the time, I thought it was really bizarre. But okay, but now in hindsight, I realize, at least she was sort of working on sorting her shit out. But other family members, like my uncle, were crazy. My uncle, my sister had addiction issues. My uncle, like he once came, like he's had problems with drugs. We don't see him or hear from him anymore, apart from the legal action.
Right.
I hope he doesn't hear this. Maybe he'll sue me. Fuck him. He once showed up at my house. He was barefoot, off his tits, And it was like the scene in Goodfellas, you know, when Henry Hill's running away from the helicopters.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was like that. And he's like, you got to take me back to my grandma's house, was where he was staying. Like, I got bugs in me. I'm like, fuck me. All right.
What?
And my grandma, when was this? Right, yeah, yeah. Yeah, my grandma had just passed away, and my grandma was one of the most important people to me in my life. She just passed, and I was going to go to her house at some point when I'd collected myself to spend a bit of time in the environment, you know, her home.
Yeah.
But my uncle had moved in, and he'd gone off the shits, man. And he came barefoot. He's like, you got to take me back to the house. I've got bugs all on me, blah, blah, blah. Driving him back, he's just talking gibberish. I get to the house. He's jumped out of the first floor window in a panic. Then I have to climb up to get in. And he's like, be careful, there's lasers everywhere. I'm like, all right. I'll watch out for the lasers. And I go in the house, and unfortunately the whole place is fucking trash, man. He's trashed it.
Oh.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
Had to let him in the front door, yeah.
Oh, man. And so you didn't have time to sort of get your head around your grandma not being there anymore.
No, I couldn't just get on with it. And it was mad, like, yeah. And my relationship with drink and drugs is, like I'm sure anyone's is, it's very complex. I haven't done any drugs for like 4 years, but I think at that time I was sort of out with my friends on the weekend, getting fucked up. It was that sort of period of my life. And I'm in my grandma's house, and I remember as I'm looking around, about to let him in, I'm like, I get to her bedroom, trashed to shit. And I remember there was like a rock of coke on the on her table.
Mm.
And like, part of me was like, that might be quite tasty for a little night out. And then the other part was like, oh no, I need to let my uncle in.
Wow.
Try and sort this shit out.
See, that's crazy.
I always had the guilt in my mind when I was partying, and I needed to. And luckily for me, the thing that saved me really from going down that road more than anything was like comedy. Really, really, it did, because you can't be getting fucked up and partying like an idiot and doing comedy. They just don't mix. I mean, you can, but you won't achieve greatness, and you won't really reach your potential if you do, I think.
No,
some people,
there
are some people who I've met in life who are able to just get absolutely trolleyed, still be the life and soul, don't feel a thing, hungover, but they move forward. But I was never like that. It inhibited me. It made me kind of crazy. It's not for me. And I had friends who I fought with, like the party animals, the life and soul, and some of them are in recovery now. So you never really know with people.
No.
It's best to get off the train while it stops.
Yes, and trying to leap from it while it's hurtling towards oblivion.
Exactly. I don't know. What do you think? You think you can be addicted to strong substances or have drink problems and really fulfill your potential comedically? I don't know.
No, I don't think so. It used to be that you'd get one or two people that's how they did it, you know? That's... Like Doug Stanhope talks about him, you know, he drinks and he doesn't do drugs so much, but he'd do whatever. And, you know, Hunter S. Thompson, you know, was on everything up until he killed himself. And I don't think
there may be something in that he was on everything until he killed himself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, this is it, isn't it? It's something there. But it's that I think only one or two people kind of harness it in a way that they can ride it and it helps them. It enhances what they're doing. Whereas I'm not. I know what happens. I'm really good at being pissed up to a point.
Yeah,
and then I'll tip. And when I tip, I'm an asshole. And it's. I don't even think. The thing is, I'm such an asshole. I don't even think I am being an asshole. I'm having fun.
It's the worst kind of asshole.
Exactly. I'm having fun, and it'll be someone else will go, Rich, calm down, and that will give me the I go, what do you mean? I'm having a good time. I'm the life and soul of the party. Why are you telling me to stop? And that's when so it's trying to get to that point. We're having fun. I'm fun to be around, and then I have to stop before the arsehole turns up.
Yeah.
I never
was an arsehole, but I mean, I'm in my head a lot, and these things, these substances, and they can play havoc with you. And we're like, what we do, we have to be so self-aware at all times And there's so much stuff going on in the news and all that other shit. Like, if you're not mentally equipped to deal with it all, it can take you, man, swallow you up. So absolutely, I was aware of that. Yeah. It took me long enough to fucking realize it.
But that's the thing. Is, you know, it does. It takes. I know I used to drink quite a bit early, sort of early 2000s, just before I just started comedy, and I was drunk all the time. I was working a job that I could just be pissed. I was working in Brick Lane, and I'm just pissed.
What were you
at
doing?
Lunchtime, I'm just selling T-shirts. And we used to do festivals, and you could do a festival off your nut.
Oh yeah, it's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and so
these days I do. When I do a festival now, I do my set and I just leave. There's no point sticking around now. I can't drink or get fucked up. What's the point?
But I've tried to do it. I've tried to gig a couple of times, pissed, and it is not fun. It's not fun for them. Not fun for. Oh, I can't remember what I'm doing. I'm slurring. I just look like an idiot. And I think things have changed now. People want a certain amount of professionalism from you. You know, I mean, there's acts that you might, they sort of pretend they've had a few, but they haven't really, you know, it's all part of the act. And
yeah, you see that a lot in the rap world. That was something I did sort of material on as well. Mm. Like the fact that I think rap music is the sort of last bastion of men's mental health that needs to be addressed properly. Because there's a lot of, because it's basically pop music at this point, but there's so many backward things in it, like the drug taking, the misogyny. But with regards to the drug taking, a lot of men in that world, they're so alpha male, they're probably dealing with untold pressure and stress, maybe from their lifestyles or the pressures of what they're doing. And they self-medicate, you know, they smoke a fuck ton of weed. They're doing all kinds of designer drugs, which are now popular, like lean, which is just basically heroin in a cup.
Lean? Like, what is that?
It's codeine. I never did it. I always wanted to try it, but I never got lucky enough to try it. No. It's fucking deadly. It's not good. It's like codeine cough syrup. It was popular with rappers from like deep South America. That's okay. How they like codeine, pour it in a cup. Slip that shit. It's a whole subculture of it.
Really?
And lean. Yeah. Like 3-6 Mafia. And then it became mainstream in American rap, talking about lean. And then you got people like Travis Scott, the new wave of rappers, and they basically talk about doing drugs openly, like coke, MD. Americans have just got hold of Dizzle now, and they're like over the moon with it. We've been talking about it for years, but they're like, that's their new thing, Molly. And all these things that they're talking about, it's sold to young people as, you know,
a way
making
of,
it and celebrating with very, very dangerous drugs. And it's all right for them to do it because they're selling an aspirational lifestyle. But the average schmo on the street, they might be sipping lean, but they don't have fucking millions of dollars. No. they got to do their job. And also the thing that I said is it's kind of... it's more catchier and more exciting. Like that's why there's a rap song that's hey, 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 smoke weed every day. And there isn't one that's hey, 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 I'm clinically depressed. You know what I mean? That's the difference.
Yeah.
Selling it. That's what, because like really, unfortunately, I'm trying to do my bit to change this, but like mental health and men's mental health in rap, it's not cool yet really to talk about it.
That's the change. I mean, we've started seeing sports personalities like Ricky Hatton, and Peter Crouch and people like that, they're coming out and saying, you know, they've struggled, and Tyson Fury and that's what needs to happen. And like you say, it hasn't started happening in the rap game.
There's bits and pieces. Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah. It's so much better than it used to be. Mm. So much better, but still, there's still a way to go. I'm trying to do my bit. I got a song coming out called Grimefulness, which is a grime song about relaxation techniques.
Oh, nice.
Which would be pretty funny.
That's quite a mashup.
Yeah. But like, it's still authentic rhyme track, still funny. But like, all the stuff is researched by me and stuff I've done, you know, so it's useful.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. There's ways to be creative with it.
And do you find that that's your outlet, doing your music, creating music?
Yeah, absolutely. I love writing. I love writing tunes. I just love writing. And I'm glad that I found it. Some people don't find things for many years.
Yeah, true. You've got a radio show as well, right?
It's just a one-off, but yeah.
Yeah.
I hope they make more. But it's only a one-off.
That's cool, man. Well, that's just, yeah, but that...
Surely, that was fun to make.
Was it good?
Oh, yeah, so much fun. I mean, you know what it's like making something that people are enjoying. It's cool.
Mm, yeah, nice. And it's like, I find music very therapeutic. That's, I've said this before. I always get, if I can feel my stress levels rising and I'm like, I need to just have a minute and just put my phone to one side and I'll whack on an album that I know and love, that I know will just give me a minute just to level out a little while. And I've met people that don't like music and it baffles me.
How many, really?
Yeah. Not many. But I've met a couple
like
of people.
Don't like music.
Yeah. And you're like, whoa, that's... I mean, I get it if you say you don't like football or you don't like chocolate or something, but
yeah,
say you don't like music...
What a psycho.
Yeah.
What do they do? Or do they just stare at a wall thinking?
I don't know what they do. If anyone's listening to this and you're one of those people that doesn't like music, drop me a line because I want to talk to you.
They should be a guest. They need to be a guest on this. Find out what went wrong in their lives. Was
maybe
it
they
being
were
a baby
by
in the mobile? They're just like, this is shit. Never
abused
again.
By an orchestra or something like that. I don't know. I don't know, but I don't know, man. I can't even remember. It was someone I used to work with, and I was putting on a radio station, and I went, "Oh, can you not?" I went, "Oh, what? Sorry, do you not want?" I went, "Oh, I just don't like music."
Can you not?
Can
you not put on any music?
Don't.
Are you doing that?
Huh?
I remember you coming home after that journey.
Yeah.
I remember how upset you were.
Oh, that was later on. I can't remember who that was. I was in the Jason's talk about. I got in from a gig and I'd given someone a lift, and I had music on, and they didn't want it on. And I went,
I
said, "You can put on what you like." They went, "No, I'm not bothered."
It's funny when people get. Have you ever been with someone who hates your music?
They said, "I don't like music," and apparently you went silent.
This is a three-way now.
I don't. I get it if someone says, "I don't like your music,"
But no, it's still quite hurtful though. I get that a lot. If you put something on, they're like, "Nah, this is shit." You're like, "No, you don't understand. It's good." No, it's shit.
It's that. I know someone else that says I'll put an album. They go, "This is shit. They're shit." And you go, this isn't. It's not. You might not like it, but it's not shit." I love music, and I don't understand people that don't. And that's on me. That I'm sure there's a valid reason. You can you can not like certain genres. I know people that don't like rap. I know people that don't like rock. I know people that like, and, you know, a lot of things, but.
Yeah. I get inspired by, like with comedy, I kind of get inspired by good music and shit music. I actually sometimes will actively seek music that is shit, like objectively shit. Like I love 90s pop music. I like listening to bad old grime sets and because I can find inspiration from things that aren't necessarily perfect.
Yeah.
Same with comedy. You might learn something. I like watching a bad comedian, not bomb, but just be shit. Because it's like, okay, you can pick up on some things that you might be doing yourself that make this person unlikable and this material hack. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or you can learn, as has been said many times, you learn more from the shit gigs than you do from the good ones.
Definitely. I saw, I saw you at the Chappelle concert, you saw him, we were at the same one.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's like, he was good, but like, what can you really learn from watching Chappelle for an hour? Not much. You can enjoy it for what it is. But yeah. I think you can learn from someone terrible. So what I'm saying is terrible comedians are more influential than Dave Chappelle.
That's going to be the tag.
Yeah, that concert was crazy. It was so, the thing that was interesting was how the hype was built for Dave. Like they made us stand up to give him a standing ovation as he walked on. And also, do you remember the hoodies that he was selling?
Yeah.
Well, I did a tweet about it. They're like, what was it? 500 quid?
Yeah, something like that, wasn't it? Yeah, really, really, really staying true to your roots there, Dave, with your £500 hoodies.
It's mad.
I'll tell you what was cool, though. Because I was there with someone I'd literally met the night before. He's a friend of a friend. And there'd been some confusion with tickets, and he and I ended up going together. And then we get there, and then in front of us, there's some other comics, that, so I walked in and they're all like, oh, Rich, how's it going? I'm like, hey, how's it going? Good to see you. And he looked at me like, who the fuck are you? I'm like, yeah, doesn't matter who I am, man. Doesn't matter who I am. You just take a seat, all right? You're our Will's dog. yeah, that was good. But I enjoyed it. I thought Dave was great.
Yeah, he was.
Call him Dave now. Not even Chappelle. Dave.
Call him Dave. Our mate Dave. That's my guy. I would love to gig with him one day. He's on the list. I don't know if it will ever happen.
It
elusive
would be,
man.
He's a very. I love that kind of comedy. You know that. It's not even observational, is it? It is.
It's just effortless.
Effortless. Yeah.
He's got soul. He's got pure soul.
Yeah, man. I love that. And he's not scared. He just says, because he trusts his opinion. He trusts himself to know that what he's actually saying isn't offensive. It's actually well thought out, and he does care about people, but people misunderstand sometimes.
Yeah. That is it. You never think he's being hateful, even when he's saying some crazy shit.
Like, yeah.
You never know it's not coming from a bad place.
And that's the problem with a lot of things now. None of us are allowed to say anything. We can't. People don't trust the intent. They kind of, if you're questioning anything, they kind of go, why? You should just be agreeing. You go, no, I don't not agree. I'm just asking a few questions about it. And
yeah. Well, you know, I like to be on the fence about everything. I try to be non-offensive. I never set out to upset or offend anyone ever.
Same.
But if they do, like, I'm sorry, but it's never ever my intention. Even, I don't know, with this, like, with things I write or produce, that's why I think people need a bit more compassion.
Yeah, we're definitely missing that empathy, compassion.
Like, especially online, I never had a shitstorm online. I piped up maybe about anti-Semitism stuff, and that was horrific and horrible to wade into and really unpleasant. But like, I think most people, particularly online, they just want to have a bit, little feeding frenzy and move on because it's a bit of a rush. Yeah. Like electronic fox hunting or something, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. What did you make of all that with the Labour Party? I didn't look into it, to be honest, but I just kept seeing all that stuff, like, you know, Jeremy
Corbyn.
What did
I make of it with the Labour Party? Well, I think some of it's still going. It's basically classic anti-Semitism just repackaged and repurposed. And Corbyn specifically himself, I don't know whether he's an anti-Semite. What I do know is he mixed with some dodgy people. He said some dodgy things and he didn't hold himself accountable to it.
No.
And other people in his party were probably more so towards that side. And because everybody wanted this new Labour government and everything, they became sort of cult-like and they refused to listen to other opinions. And the Jews were accused of being conspiratorial. Oh, they're all secret Tories, or, you know, pipe down. This is too important for you to get involved in, all this kind of stuff. And it just created an environment that was really hostile. I wasn't welcome in that place. I didn't want anything to do with that shit.
No.
You know, that's how I felt. And when I spoke up about it, I was told to pipe down or I'm making it up. I lost friends over it because I'm trying to say this, things that he's saying are wrong and they're making me and people I know feel a way.
Yeah.
We can feel it. We can sense it. And he's like, no, you're wrong. Give me examples. And I'm like, all right, I'll give you examples. X, Y, Z. And like, no, that's not an example that satisfies me. Give me another example. And all this sort of emotional labor you do to present people with how you're feeling and then they like discount it. And that's what we had for a few years and we were very concerned. And like the thing is, I never wanted to be outspoken about shit like that. I just want to do dick jokes and fucking rap songs. I don't really care. But the hypocrisy is what I didn't like because everybody's quick to call out all other things as they should.
Yeah.
But there was a bit of a blind spot with this because it overlapped with a few other things that people prioritized. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally get what you mean. People were more, like you say, they were more like, we just want a Labour government. Oh, we don't have to worry about it. No, it's not real anti-Semitism. It's just a little bit of, you know, cuddly anti-Semitism. And you're like, well, it's not, is it?
It all leads one way and it fucks with your head, man. It's really unpleasant. I had to, when I was involved in these things, I had to take time out because it takes up your your mind space. You know, it's like yeah, any yeah, form yeah. of bigotry or discrimination. It's just unpleasant. It's wasted energy.
Yeah. You know?
And the people that do it, I don't think many of them are bad people. That's really the danger of it. They probably were acting in good faith in their mind, but they don't realize that someone on the end is dealing with this in real life. And, you know, they're paranoid about what's next.
Yes. So
a bit of empathy is needed. You know, I try and do it with all kinds of things. I never really knew much about trans people at all. And then I met some recently and spoke to them and learned a bit about, and it's a similar thing, like just accept that people have different outlooks to you and, you know, respect it and try and understand a bit more. It's not difficult stuff, but sometimes it just needs to be said.
Yeah. Well, that's what this has come up here on this podcast a lot, is that communication is key. Talking to each other is key.
Yeah. People and Twitter, for that very reason, is the worst place on earth because it is, you can't talk. You just shout something.
Yep.
If it's wrong, you get quote tweeted and everyone shits on you for a few hours and then they move on. And that's like with anti-Semitism specifically, what's interesting on Twitter is you can be anti-Semitic in a tweet, but it might take a few more tweets from someone else to explain why that was kind of offensive, by which point everyone's moved on. No one gives a fuck, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of quite a unique thing in that way.
Is this something that you've had to deal with a lot growing up?
I wouldn't say growing up I've dealt with it like, and it's been a huge, horrible factor in my life. No, but there's been plenty of little things over the years that I've been aware of. And we've always had it ingrained in us that it's something to be aware of on the periphery. There are people out there who will hate you for no reason or who will think certain ways about you. Mm. And like in my experience, I've been pretty sheltered from it. I didn't experience too much, the odd joke, things being said, you know, blah, blah, blah. But as I got older, it might have increased more. When you're on the internet and people's speech is not regulated, you can really see, you know, some of the venom people think out in the open.
Mm.
And then it gets to places in politics and then you're like, oh, this isn't very good. This isn't a good place. And then specifically in the comedy industry, I've experienced things like that.
Really?
You know, like anti-Semitic heckles that were just sort of laughed off. And I've spoken to people in green rooms that have said mad shit, crazy shit that you just have to accept because we're all so different and we're coming from different places, mixing together. And that's why there's so many dodgy sex creeps in comedy as well. There's no HR department in comedy, no one to take it up with. You just got to like take each person as they are and sort of deal with them. You know?
Yeah, true. Very true.
So with that, and I never want to pick a fight with my colleagues over shit like that. I just have to let it go. But on the whole, it's not been like, you know, not shocking, but I don't want to have to wait for it to get to that point.
No.
It's like people online who talk about snowflakes and they say things like, you know, those soldiers in World War II didn't complain about their anxiety. They just, you know, they just got on with it. And it's like, yeah, your emotional barometer is only activated when someone experiences trench warfare. It says a lot about you. Does it really have to get to that point before you start caring about someone?
Well, that's what it is, isn't it? It's that, it's because it's, like you say, it's on the periphery. And it's so the fact that you've been brought up to just be aware, which is insane, that you have to be in, you have to have that mindset, you know? That's something I've never had to experience growing up. I talk about privilege a lot. And it's only been in the last few years I've sort of realised what privilege actually means, you know?
Yeah.
So I've the never...
Privilege had, is an interesting one as well, because I think I'm privileged in some ways and like not privileged in others, but that's another thing to not get too carried away with.
Yeah.
Like, because it's all a spectrum, you know. You would have experienced things that I have no insight in and I can learn from. I wouldn't just discount you as privileged such and such. I think it's bullshit. I want to try and unify people and not make it more divided if I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very easy to divide people and say, this is your lived experience, you're this, you know.
Yeah.
And that is valid to some extent, but there's more that unites us than doesn't.
Absolutely. And that's what we're missing now. That's why we should be not screaming at each other on Twitter. We should be doing this, having these conversations and finding out about asking questions, you know? I like you mentioned trans people before. I hadn't really had much experience with trans people in my life. I'd met one or two people that were trans, but only through doing this podcast that I've gone, all right, well, let's ask some questions. Let's find out. And it's been incredibly enlightening, and that's what needs to happen. People just need to talk to each other a bit more. Because I want people to come together. I don't want this. It feels like we're being divided on purpose.
Yeah. The debate with people is a really good example. It's sort of similar to the anti-Semitism thing to some extent, because what it is with trans people is they form such a small minority.
Yeah.
They don't actually have a large group of people to speak out for them. They speak out about themselves and they have people with good intentions, but then the rest of the 99% of people who aren't have their very vocal opinions on it. And maybe they shouldn't, because they don't fucking know what they're talking about.
Yeah, you're right.
But all of a sudden, 99% of people have mad opinions on what trans people should be doing, what they should be saying. And it's like the trans community is minuscule. So maybe you should just pipe down a little bit. And it's like, it's the same with Jews, you know, like we're only in England, we're tiny. But then when all this shit with Corbyn was happening, all of a sudden we were under the spotlight. Yeah. And then when the shit with Wiley happened, we're under a spotlight. We don't really want to be there. We just want to live and be normal. And that's when it's very stressful and not pleasant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everyone just wants to, no one wants special treatment. Everyone just wants to live their life and do what they do. But when things put communities under a spotlight, it's very stressful for all involved.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. And you've hit the nail on the head. It is that. It isn't about we want more or we want to be better or we want to be higher up the chain or whatever. We just want to be able to live our lives. And that's the same with everybody. That's the same across the board with everybody. I don't know why that's a problem to anybody, you know?
I think it's because, because everyone lives online as well. I think the online discourse is one of sort of snarkiness. That's why I don't think I've been very good on Twitter and stuff, because I think what prevails is a snarkiness and a mean streak rather than being pleasant. If you're nice to everyone on Twitter, you probably won't go very far. If you have all these hot takes and like put downs and pylons on people, you're probably going to have a healthy career on Twitter and a lot of social media, which is a shame.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I don't go on there very often. I've said this before, I might make a comment about something and then I'll just get shot down within 5 seconds. Like, no, you can't say that. You can't say that. And I'm like, oh God. All right. And I'll just delete it. Yeah. I'll just delete it. And then,
I delete a lot of stuff I put up instantly. Instantly. I put up something and I just delete it. Have zero conviction on my Twitter output.
I'm the same. I'll go, oh, that's quite funny. And I'll put it out and then, this is shit. And I bottle it and take it down again. I'm just a nice guy.
I don't know how much has been spoken about, but like, I think social media is like, should be illegal. I think it's the smoking of this generation. This generation, like, it's like big tobacco from the 70s. Like, my mental health and my general happiness is attributed so much to meaningless shit online. It's terrifying.
Oh man,
like
same.
Instagram. I'll put on a picture and I'll spend hours just looking at the algorithms, what they've decided to reward me with serotonin wise, just for some picture. It's fucking insignificant.
It comes up. It comes up a lot, man. On here. So Twitter, I don't really fuck with. If I can, I'll publicize the podcast. I don't really get involved in anything else otherwise, because I get it wrong. I'm not cut out for it, but you know, I love Instagram actually. I just put pictures up and look at other people's pictures and. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I liked Instagram when I muted everyone and then I liked it. Muted everybody. When you have a baby, muted. Married, muted. Bought a house, muted. Comedian doing well, muted. And now all I basically had, and I had to, I followed attractive women for a time and then I realized that's toxic, muted. So it's just meme pages now.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, do you know what? That's what you got to do. If it helps your head, You got to do it, mate. I mean, Jade's mute list of words on Twitter is extraordinary. She's more or less blocked and muted every word. Just everything. Yes, queen, all that. It's just, she's just muted them all. Yeah. I've muted all football stuff. So.
Are you not into football?
No, not interested, mate.
Wow, that's surprising. I hate football.
I hate football. I find it.
Do you hate it?
Yeah, I hate it. I hate the way it, and no disrespect to anyone listening, but I hate the way that it dominates everything. The importance is placed on it.
I find this so surprising.
Everyone
does. You seem like a football guy.
I have that. Yeah,
I hate football. I wish I liked it because everyone's so into it, all the games and everything, but I could not give a toss. I've been dragged to so many football matches as well. It's so dull. Oh, man. I know about four players as well.
It's just one of those things. Like I said to a gig last night, these guys were being a bit laddie, and I talked about football, and I went, well, I don't like football anyway, and they were like, bleh. I went, what are you talking about? I don't like that team because they're not my favourite colour. Oh, and I don't like all those players, and then your team later on will buy one of those players and go, oh, we like him now. This is all shit. This is playground stuff. But
it's all backwards. The kits are so expensive as well. To be a fan, the season tickets are so expensive. It just seems like corrupt and bizarre.
We should have because it should be people that we admire, like nurses and doctors and people like that. So I think maybe nurses and we should turn that into like a sports thing and have the top 10 doctors or whatever and they get
see
to
that
sell,
I'd watch.
They get to sell a kit. Like, so you get a kit of your favorite nurse that kids can wear and, you know, that with the name on the back. And and then nurses and doctors and people like that will make some money.
Defo, I was going to say, when lockdown happened, I became a football fan briefly because I really liked it when they banned all the games and then they had to continue having commentators speculating on nothing. I quite like that. That was quite entertaining. I think I would watch football if they sort of reduced all the fees, all the big, big wages and like gave them like what they used to get in the old days, like sixpence a week or something. And then they have to play on all those muddy fields. I would watch that. That'd be
That's
quite
it.
Cool.
Oh, that was proper
some football. Yeah,
proper football.
I've changed. I'm less jaded about football. Some footballers, all right. Like I like this Michael Rashford character. He's this guy, and I like
Marcus.
Yeah, Marcus Rashford. Sorry. And who's the dude that had the machine gun tattoo?
Oh my god, I don't know.
And like Piers Morgan was like saying, this guy's not a icon, not a role model, but then he turns out that he was like a complete legend.
Absolute legend. He was.
I'm asking you, like you would know. You don't know anything about football either.
I don't know. Do you know what? I know I'm sorry that I've been so vocal. I don't, do you know what? I don't hate
is
a strong word.
It's great that you're vocal.
Yeah, it just, I used to live near Charlton Football Ground.
I'm on the Google over here.
Raheem Sterling.
Yeah, this is the third complete football dunce of this group. I have not the first idea.
So no.
Hopefully all that is correct.
I'm so sorry to anyone listening that's into their football. This is not been for you, unfortunately.
I like the passion and it's the sense of community, but as someone who doesn't like football, for 95% of male-dominated conversations, I'm discounted out of it.
Same.
Like when you start a new job and they say, what team, you see the football, you see the match? No, I don't see the match. Oh, all right.
But you still get told about it though, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you get told about it.
Still get told. I remember being I was supporting a known comedian and he was watching the, I don't know if it was the Euros or something like that. And I tried to join in and I think I just gave him the ump. Because he just knew. I think it annoyed him that I didn't like football.
And yeah, then, the people does yeah. want people don't yeah. trust you.
No,
English, you
they
know,
don't.
Like
yeah.
Why? What happened to you?
That's exactly it. They don't trust you. They don't.
I don't
trust
really like.
You.
I don't really like any sport, really. Though I like. Someone took me to Wimbledon once, and I got to see Serena Williams play. That was amazing.
Oh yeah, amazing.
I quite like boxing. I like solo sports where you don't have to rely on a team. I like boxing. Tennis is all right. That's about it.
I kind of look at clips of stuff. I don't really get involved. Like I say, I'm more about my music. I just sit volleyball.
I like volleyball. I like playing it and I like watching it. But yeah.
I like the way they've Americanized darts. Like they've made it really exciting and yeah. And it's all explosions. It's like the 2020, the cricket at Lords, it's all explosions and flashing lights and which makes me laugh. Well, it used to be just a couple of fat blokes in a pub drinking proper pints of beer.
As it should
smoking.
Be.
Real man stuff. It's real definitely. Man stuff. So
Darts is great, actually.
I'm so bad at darts. I'm terrible.
Me too.
I don't know.
I like pool. You know. Is pool a sport?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. I like pool.
Are you good at it?
No.
I always think I am. I have a burst when I first get on the table and I'm knocking them down. I'm like, oh, I'm really good at this. And then it just all goes to pot.
I think what it is with pool is you look, no matter how shit you are, you look like you're a professional pool player while you're preparing the shots, you know, angling things up.
I always feel like Paul Newman when I'm playing pool.
Right.
You know? Yeah, because he was in that film, The Colour of Money. Pool film. Was it called The Hustler or something like that?
Oh, right.
Yeah. And so I always feel like him. I feel cool. But I don't look like him. I look like a lorry driver playing pool in a pub. Is what I look like. No disrespect to lorry drivers.
How many no disrespects have we had to do this episode? No disrespect to football fans. No disrespect to trans people. No disrespect to the Jewish community. You have to say this now, Joe.
You have to do it. You have to say it.
It's a shame.
They can't rely on just your words and your tone. You have to actually say, I'm not being disrespectful.
Yeah, good. I wasn't either. I don't think I've said anything libelous.
I spoke about
my stepmother at the start, but she can fuck herself. Honestly, oh, man, we could have done another hour on Earth. Christ.
Oh, well, we'll do that next time when your dad's out of the woods.
Oh, man, I would love to give you an update on that because things are rough right now. We're facing bankruptcy, all sorts.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it's really, really bad. And then it was bad before COVID, and now Christ knows what's going to happen.
Oh, God.
But you know what? We just got to keep our head up, keep going.
Yeah, that's right, man. That's very true. And I think that's what we all have to do is just not let it get us down. You know?
Indeed.
This has been a pleasure, Joe. Thank you so much for coming on, man.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Oh, dude, it's been a pleasure. Where can we find you online, funnily enough?
Come find me. I'm at Jester Jacobs on Instagram. Subscribe to my mailing list at joejacobs.website. And I would love if anyone listening to this would subscribe to my YouTube because I've got an album coming out hopefully this year, by the end of the year, called Grimefulness.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we'll put a link up and stuff like that later on when that all comes out. So it'll all be connected to this when that comes out. So brilliant.
All
Joe.
Right, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my man. You take care and I'll speak to you soon.
You too, in a bit. Peace.
Produced by Paul Daniels at pauldaniels.tv.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.